Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. It's a Zoom edition, so it'll be a little bit shorter because I don't pay for Zoom. And, you know, after 30 minutes, you get the warning, 10 minutes left. You know what? I'm wasting a lot of time just explaining this. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Matthew. I've been doing this at your place since we've started Macko and Cos 2.0. Now we're really trying.
That's right.
We couldn't make it happen. Mm-hmm. We couldn't even get the two a week that we're shooting for. It's the time of year. Plus, I got a little bit sick. So I sent you a picture of how I look right now. And do you want to describe it for the fine folks?
I would say a homeless chic would be the first one. You had some sort of like, almost like long johns, but with hearts on it.
And they're called pajamas.
Yeah, you had heart-adorned white pajamas. You got a CBC cap on, a sweater. There's a lot going on, Bob.
Not only do I have one bit of CBC swag, I'm wearing two on top of each other. I have a 22 minutes, this hour is 22 minutes zip up, and a 22 minutes hoodie over top of that. I grew up in a radio family. We just wear promotional items. That's what radio is all about.
It really is. It's by the way, it's free stuff, and then it's koozies, beer koozies and mugs.
You're right. We only have 30 minutes, so we should probably get to it. And we have a lot to get to. So if it's okay, I want to start with the Leafs.
Do it.
Because even though we advocated, and this, I think we stand by this, but we advocated for expand your portfolio. They're very interesting right now. They beat Columbus 2-1 in OT a couple nights ago. They got Washington coming up today at 5:00. But that OT win wasn't very convincing. They didn't play great. Joseph Woll kept them in the game. It went to OT. It feels like they're a team in total flux, and we don't know where the bottom is. So I wanted to give you a Leafs in six words and then kick it over to you, okay?
Yep.
My six words are, by New Year's Day, we'll know.
That was good. Because when you started by New Year's Day, I'm like, Bob, you've only got two words left. How are you going to do this?
By New Year's Day, we'll know. My official position on this is I suspect they're not going to make the playoffs. But they got Austin Matthews back. They're going to get Tanev back. They're going to get Knies back. They're going to be better. We saw Joseph Woll look good. And nothing makes a coach smarter than a good goalie. So some kind of bounce back is likely. How big? I don't know. Is it enough? Hard to say. By New Year's Day, we'll know.
Yeah, by New Year's Day, you're going to have a large enough sample to know exactly who the Maple Leafs are. And the last time we thought they were going to bounce back was their win before, which also was overtime against St. Louis. Then they lost two in a row, including that bad one against Montreal. And you're right, Joseph Woll was great, but the Leafs didn't dominate. The Leafs were not the dominant team in that win against Columbus. And to your point about the we'll know, we're going to know about the middle class of the Maple Leafs. Because Max Domi, Matias Michelli, Dakota Joshua, Nick Waugh, Brandon Carlo, all those guys make between $3 and $3.75 million. They're the middle class of the Maple Leafs, and by and large, they have been either invisible or out-and-out bad. We'll know more about just who those guys are by New Year's.
They're 10-10-3 right now, which isn't very good, 23 points. They are two behind Florida, but they're also second last in the conference. There's such a logjam ahead of them that there's a lot of teams to leapfrog, but there's also a lot of mediocre ahead of them. So in 17 games, and that's what it is between now and New Year's Day, it's 17 games, 10 away, 7 at home. I think we're going to know. And put it to you this way. Let's say over those 17 games, they wind up 9-8. Mm-hmm. Which seems, you know, reasonable for a team that's struggling. They're on the road a lot, but we expect them to play better. That will resolve absolutely nothing, which I think resolves everything.
Yeah.
In a weird sort of way. Like if they're not looking really good after 17 games, then you know that this is a mediocre aging team at best with a bunch of expensive middle-class players that aren't offering much, and it's time for the controlled burn. People will say sell off, but I don't think you can do that in this market realistically. So I'm calling it the controlled burn, where you get rid of expiring contracts and you safely start to torch this thing.
The problem with the controlled burn, it's a good way to describe it, is the Maple Leafs, they don't have their first round pick this year if it's unless it's in the top five. It goes to Boston because of Brandon Carlo. So it's either they got to go full in, try to do their best to make the playoffs, or be really bad. They can't be in the middle.
And we don't have enough knowledge right now to answer that question. What we have is strong suspicions and the beginnings of lasting trends. But if they're still second last in the conference after 17 more games, well, then you know you want that top five pick.
Yeah,
Right? Now
absolutely.
you're actively trying, and the controlled burn, let's just say, becomes a bit more widespread.
Yeah, then it's like, everyone go home. Let's just see what happens with this fire at that point. Because also, they don't have their second round pick this year. They don't have their first round pick next year. That goes to Philly. And you mentioned age. The Leafs are the sixth oldest team. So they're old. They don't have a great prospect pool. They don't have a lot of draft picks in the next couple of years. Like this is a really bad situation the Maple Leafs are in. And to me, the only way they turn it around is Austin Matthews becomes the guy he was 2 years ago. Morgan Rielly plays in the regular season like we've seen him in the postseason, and Chris Tanev comes back and is healthy. You need all three of those things need to happen.
I'd like to add that John Tavares stays this good. There's no guarantee that a guy who's 35 years old can keep up this pace of production. And you can't say that he's keeping in it and, keeping them in it because they're second last in the conference. They're not really in it. But if everything happens around him and he continues to be that good, Tavares, I'm happy. I want him to work out. I'm glad that he's contributing in some meaningful way. And I think you need Willie to stay hot too. Really, what you're saying, Matt, is they just need their best players to be good enough so that they're not shit. That's it, right? Because they're not getting any help. So if it's not from their best players, it's not from anybody.
The middle class, as I said, the middle class isn't helping them. I don't know why all the defensemen seem to be bad, but it's like Morgan, you've got to be way better. Like to me, I look at Morgan Rielly and Austin Matthews. Those are the two guys. They've got to be stars. And Austin Matthews, you're taking on Ovechkin tonight. You know, if ever there was a game where you're going to go and just, dominate and score a couple, this is the game going up against Ovechkin, where it might be one of the last time he ever faces against Ovechkin.
I never know how to fairly judge what somebody is like in terms of how bad they want to win, because not everybody expresses it in the same way. However, the theory that we have too many Delgados and not enough Dougies on the Leafs, I think holds true. More and more, Austin Matthews just feels like a Carlos Delgado to me, in the sense that Delgado was one of the best players of his era, but he wasn't really a fired up leader. And when the Jays needed somebody to say, hey, we need a kick in the ass to be better here, their best player couldn't deliver it. I feel like the lesson I'm getting from this is skill is really important, but skill and will have to be matched. Again, I'm not judging, like, I don't know how badly he wants to win, but whatever he's doing is not leading these guys.
There is a level of psychopath that is needed. Think Nathan MacKinnon, think Connor McDavid, like that highest level. And maybe being a psycho is a skill, because that's hard to
That's a
do.
great point.
It's very physically and emotionally taxing to be a psycho. You know what's better? To be me. Just a little bit of a, just a leaf in the lazy river, doing my best.
The turtle from Finding Nemo.
Just doing my best to be happy, making everyone around me happy. But to truly succeed, you got to be a bit of a psycho. And that's not easy to do. Like, what it's easy to say, hey, go out there and try super hard. And they do try hard, but there's that top level. And that's where we don't usually see it from Matthews.
Maddie, when you and I worked together on radio, I was the psycho.
Yes.
And that's not to say that you weren't a hard worker or you didn't show will. You actually were an incredibly hard worker. You showed up prepared. You were like the consummate professional. Every single thing that came up, you did extremely conscientiously and at a high level. It was such a dream to work with. But when there needed to be an email sent out at 6 a.m. it was coming from me.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
You took care of the day-to-day, and I took care of the fringes. And they're in a fringe situation right now. They're in a bit of a tailspin, and you need somebody. I remember just stories of Mark Messier with the Rangers the year that they won. They had lost a couple games in a row, and he was close to tears in the dressing room and just said to everyone, "You guys don't understand. This can never happen again." And you don't get the feeling that Austin Matthews is close to tears, having lost 7 of 8 games. Of course, he hasn't been there, in fairness. You know what worried me the most, Maddie, about that game against Columbus? Was that when they were down 1-0, there was an offensive zone draw for the Leafs. And who did Berube send over the boards? He sent out Nylander, he sent out Tavares, and Easton Cowan. They needed to score. And that was the line he put in the offensive zone. When you've got your former 70 goal scorer just back from injury sitting on the bench and going, "Come on, guys, get that goal."
Yeah, I never even noticed that from that game. That's a
You
good
know,
point.
the coach's choices tell you the truth. It's like the voting record of a politician. They can say whatever they want, but when it comes right down to it, how are they voting?
Yeah, exactly. It's like you can say, Bob, you're going to vote conservative, but your CBC toque says you're not going to be voting conservative.
Bob, you can say you're going to be the CFL's number one fan. 12 years running.
12 years running, name an Argo.
Gene Mack.
Name a
Oh, you
current
mean
Argo.
current one?
What's
Oh, I'm
that?
not.
Current one.
Yeah, there's no chance. I want to play a quick game with you. It's called What's the Temperature? We always talk about the temperature of a fan base or a team or whatever. So I throw you a part of the Leafs world, and you tell me what temperature from normal to 106 fever you think they are right now. What temperature is the roster right now?
Cold. Super cold chicken.
Interesting. You're going below zero.
Oh yeah, they're bad. I'm going there. They're in bed, lethargic. The chicken noodle soup isn't taking. They've got the novelty thermometer in their mouth and the hot water bottle on them because they've got a really bad cold.
The only thing better than the novelty thermometer is the novelty check. I want all of my checks now to be giant and made of cardboard.
Happy Gilmore nailed it. Just give me the novelty checks, put in the back of the car. Absolutely.
Oh
You
my
know,
God, that is true. The checks piled up in the back of the car.
if you make minimum wage, it just feels better if you get it in a giant novelty check.
You know, I'm working now mostly freelance, and so I invoice and then they send me the check. And I'm actually going to put a request for this next project I'm on. Can you cut this? And I want it to kind of be like pizza box sized. I would say 100.8 is the temperature of the roster right now because they are sick and they're probably going to miss work in terms of the playoffs. The playoffs are like work. But it's not, you're not sure. If things get really tight, okay, you could still work at 100.8. You're not bedridden just yet, but you're probably not going to work. Means they're probably not going to the playoffs.
So then the Leafs are they're working from home, but they're starting late and leaving early.
That's exactly it. And they're dressed like me.
Yeah,
They're
they
dressed
are
in their
exactly dressed
hard
like you.
pajamas. The fans, what temperature are they?
I think the fans, I haven't like they're angry, but I feel like because of the Dylan Cease signing, because of the Raptors, and I think the fans are slowly realizing, oh, wait a minute, they're not good. I think everyone's expectations have been coming down, which actually helps emotionally because you get less upset when your expectations are kind of meeting the reality, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. I would say they're at 102, which is you are sick. You are genuine, and the Leafs fans are genuinely sick of this. But you're not hospital sick. You
No.
know, you're one good sweat away from being right back in the game. You know, if they win 4 or 5, you're going to see a lot of people are back on that bandwagon saying, "See, they weren't as bad as we thought, and
Yeah.
there is chance. And if we just get into the playoffs, anything can happen." So 102, because they're sick, they're not going to work. But they're a sweat away from being back in the game.
Yeah, like Edmonton Oilers fans, they're 105. They are the priest is there, you know, just having like that's Oilers fans right now.
Okay, last one, because we got a lot to get to and not a lot of time. What's the temperature of the front office?
110. What's the highest
Oh,
temperature
my.
it can be? What's the highest? What's the high? No, none of the guys are
That's
working.
dead.
They're dead. The man dead. They're dead because they traded all their first round picks, and the guys they brought in are either injured or aren't playing well. They're at 110. They're dead.
I went the other way. I said 99.5 because that is really? The classic temperature where, yes, technically you are ill, but you don't know what to do because you're not sick enough to stay home and you're too sick to not feel like shit in everything you do. See, they've got nothing but the shit margarita ahead of them. They're basically putting the team into a blender, as we like to say. They don't know what to do. The ingredients all suck, but are they tanking? No. Are they going for it? They can't. They're stuck in the middle. They're 99.5. They have to go to work and feel lousy about it.
I mean, it's the shit margarita is, well, Dakota Joshua, you're back. And Max Domi, we're going to probably healthy scratch you. That's a shit margarita.
I took Domi in my fantasy, like way down, thankfully. I beat Jonas last week, actually, in our fantasy pool. I beat Jonas in our week. He covers hockey for a living. Take that, Siegel.
It's the. By the way, that's the worst. Like when my friends rip on me when I'm last in fantasy football. Like, that's your job. I'm like, shut up.
Okay, so I want to get to a few things, but let's do the top five right now.
Yeah.
Because before we took our little hiatus for 10 days, I was talking about wine. And I was talking about wine in the sense of an investment. Because the stock market is scary right now. Nobody knows where to put their money. And someone was suggesting baby collectibles. And wine is a really good investment. So we threw it out to you. If I had $1,000 to invest, what are the top five wines I should invest in looking for a return?
Okay. So I immediately took out Burgundy because Burgundy's almost too expensive. You're gonna invest, you're going to have like three or four bottles. So I got rid of Burgundy. Bordeaux, don't go for the first growth, the Chateau Margaux's out there, because again, really expensive. Third growth, Chateau Giscours is what it's called. It's in the Margaux appellation. So Chateau Giscours, G-I-S-C-O-U-R-S, constantly gets super high scores and can age for 20, 25 years. I'm going to say Vega Sicilia, which is in Spain, which is in like the Rioja, Ribera del Duero area. Apologies, I forget which appellation that's in. I'm fairly sure it's Rioja. But Vega Sicilia, that's going to be number two. Number three, find great wines from other countries. There's one called Felton Road in South Island, New Zealand. They make killer Pinot Noir, and it's a place you can go to when you can't afford Burgundy. So I'm going to say Felton Road is number three. Number four, something I just did, Okanagan. There is certain wines that are going to be released now that they can never make wine again from that vineyard because that area suffered horrible deep freezes. So there's a Chardonnay from a place called Checkmate, and I just bought a six pack. This is the last time that wine will ever be made because that vineyard is destroyed, done. So there's a historic—
Sorry to interrupt. Did you buy it to drink it, or are you buying it to invest in it?
Well, I'm buying it to eventually drink it, but I think it's a good investment because there's a hell of a story behind it.
And how much would a bottle go for?
Right now, you can buy it for $100.
One bottle.
One bottle is $100.
So if I bought like 12, you know, bottles.
Yeah.
And you think, and how long does it take for something like that to appreciate?
I mean, that Chardonnay, you could throw away for 15 years easily. Easily. Maybe even 20. It's a really good Chardonnay. But it's also just one of the ones where when years go by, people are like, oh my God, that vineyard doesn't exist anymore. So there's a historic thing. There's a story thing. So I think you can get good. I think you can get a good investment on that. And finally, at number five, don't overthink it. Go get Barolo. Go get a good six pack of Barolo. There's a lot of good, great producers out there. Palo Scovino Barolo. You can age it forever. So there's five.
All right. My plan is I'm going to buy about $1,000 worth of wine as an investment. Mm-hmm. And the day I turn 65, I'm going to take that wine and I'm going to sell it. And I'm going to use the money to buy a ton of pizza.
There you go. That's going to be a good pizza. By the way, Bob, remember, dark place with very little temperature fluctuation is the key to keeping those bottles.
So it's like the Upside Down in Stranger Things. If I can just get a wine cooler in the What do they call a wine cooler? Like, where do you store it?
Yeah, it's just a wine cooler, wine cellar. But the most important thing, keep it out of sun and keep it somewhere that's not hot. You don't need to have it perfect. You just need to have it consistent.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt. I think over the course of December, we should just do all wine top fives, but we should do it as gift giving. Matt gives you his top five suggestions. It'll be like top five reds, top five whites, Canadians.
Love it. Under $20, I can do.
100%. Is that the new marker, by the way? I was wondering about this because everything's so much more expensive. Under 20 feels a little bit like going to McDonald's and thinking you're going to pay $2 for fries.
Yeah, it's under 25 really now. Wine's absolutely, like everything else on planet Earth, has gone up.
Honestly, $10 for lettuce the other day. I
What?
had to get, yeah, the place was charging $10.
Did you go to some like sort of bespoke
No.
Queen Street like grocery store?
No, it wasn't even fancy, although it was Queen Street. But it wasn't like a fancy place. It's not like I was at Whole Foods or something. Okay, we don't have a ton of time, and I'm dying to go over the NFL with you because yesterday in the NFL reminded me of your classic episode 9 in Game of Thrones, where the narratives come to a head and somebody dies. It felt like for a couple weeks we were kind of, so you're moving along, moving the narratives forward slowly. And then yesterday, American Thanksgiving, kaboom. Some big drama. So I'm just, and I won't watch on Thanksgiving because I feel like then I'm supporting America, which I won't do right now. So I'm handing it over to you, Matt. Dallas 31, Chiefs 28. Dallas now at 6-5-1. The Chiefs at 6-6 with a 47% chance of making the playoffs. Matt, simple question. Why didn't Casey win this game?
Their defense was horrible. Actually, the main reason, Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is a really good quarterback, but because he's in Dallas, more scrutiny, because of the contract he got, more scrutiny. But the reason was on third and long, Dak Prescott did it over and over again. George Pickens, hell of a pickup. Him and CeeDee Lamb had 200 yards, but I would say that's the number one thing. Kansas City's defense wasn't very good, but I want to give credit to Dak Prescott and that offensive line. They did a great job yesterday. You saw so many times Chris Jones, the great defensive tackle for the Chiefs, just shaking his head on the sideline. So the Dallas offense, Dak Prescott, that's the main reason why. And you know, it's funny, Bob. Last year, Kansas City was 15-2. Now they're 6-6. Last year, Detroit was 15-2. They're 7-5. Last year, Baltimore was 12-5. This year, they're 6-6. Those three teams, just nowhere near where we thought they were going to be.
You said something very interesting about Dak being really good. And it occurred to me, and I'm going to jump back to the Leafs real quick here, if I may, that as a 70 goal scorer, Auston Matthews is Josh Allen in that he's dominant and thrilling, and you can build a whole team around him. But post injuries, he may be becoming Dak Prescott, who is an extremely good player, but you would never say the Super Bowl. I feel good about it because we got Dak Prescott.
Absolutely. And in some ways, it's kind of unfair. I think you can win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott. Absolutely, you can. It's just, you know, Dallas either just dumb things happen to them in the playoffs. My God, Dak Prescott, Auston Matthews, actually, it's kind of a perfect analogy.
Yeah, okay then. Dallas, 6-5-1. I'm reading in ESPN that they're ready to take on anybody, anywhere, which is pretty cocky for a team that looked really, really bad, especially defensively, week after week. Three straight wins, buddy, including over KC and Philly. Those are two really high-profile teams, if nothing else. Statistically, it's not likely that they make the playoffs. However, it is the NFC, and anybody could get shit fast.
Yeah, well, what needs to happen for Dallas is they need the Bears, and like they need a couple other teams to start losing a whole bunch. Like they got to get D Detroit's got to keep losing, because it's not just Dallas has to win; it's other teams that are ahead of them obviously got to lose. That's the Captain Obvious point. But you know that they made these trades. They brought in Williams, the great defensive lineman from the Jets, and they gave up a lot of draft capital to get him. And you're seeing Dallas's defense is actually playing better than the first month where they were a horse shit out there. It's listen, this is great for the NFL, having Dallas relevant and cocky. And you, if you beat Philly and Kansas City, that's a like. That's an incredible achievement to beat those teams in back-to-back weeks.
Relevant, cocky, and charging. There's something really exciting about that team that just gets hot at the right time. And we've seen this in every sport since time immemorial. There's always some team, and you're like, they're on fire. Is there enough runway left for them to actually do this? It makes every week more exciting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And also, shout out to just NFL. Joe Burrow comes back and like throws like 40, I think he had 46 pass attempts. They did not ease him back into that. And the Bengals dominated the Ravens yesterday as well.
Okay, so as the Game of Thrones episode 9 week of the NFL continues, I'm shocked by this result, but Bengals 32, Ravens 14. 6-6 for the Ravens, but more importantly, they looked shit.
They
You know,
did.
they didn't lose a squeaker like KC did. They looked shit. Tons of turnovers, tons of fumbles, Lamar not looking particularly strong. Even though they have the same record as the Chiefs, does it feel like they're less likely to make the playoffs?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. They looked really sloppy. Tons of fumbles lost. You can't allow, like, the Bengals are not a good team. The Bengals are a bad team. They didn't have T. Higgins. They didn't have Trey Hendrickson, and they got pushed around. In fact, that score should have been worse. Cincinnati had four field goals in the first half. They couldn't do anything in the red zone. That could have been even a bigger blowout. Yeah, like, it's funny. Everyone thought the Ravens were going to just keep winning, but what happened yesterday, now it feels like, oh God, Pittsburgh's going to do it again. They're somehow, like, Mike Tomlin is going to somehow find a way to squeak out and win the AFC North.
Is it Harbaugh's last stand?
I don't think so, because there isn't that hot college coach. There isn't that, like, there isn't as many of these hot coordinators like we had last year. I think Harbaugh gets one more year after this year.
Okay, so Green Bay over Detroit. Your point about Detroit has to keep losing. It's very conceivable they could do just that. And Green Bay looks really good. Love is on a bit of a heater. Micah Parsons, 12 sacks or more in 5 straight seasons. Good thing Dallas didn't keep him.
And yet Dallas is now hot. But oh yeah, it was this again. That was just Jerry Jones thinking you could still negotiate like it's 1988, where it's a handshake and a Johnny Walker Blue.
This might be the worst Sunday ever coming up. There's just a lot
Oh,
of games.
you had the three games yesterday that were all awesome. You have a Black Friday game with the Bears and Philadelphia. This Sunday is like I'm going to go. Me and Amy are getting our Christmas tree. This Sunday, it's a perfect day to do non-sports because it is horrible slate of NFL.
My mom said to me, "Do you want to come over and have lunch?" I looked at the schedule and said, "I do.
I do.
You want to come over
Extended
and have
lunch,
lunch?"
Mom.
That said, though, Bills at Steelers is a big game. And it's mostly big. One, there's playoff ramifications, obviously, but there's almost more where's our franchise at ramifications for the Bills. As a member of, I'm not exactly Bills Mafia, but I'm a Bills enthusiast. So I'm used to the idea that we freak out over our team all the time. And we have a sense of fatalism. You know, 4 lost Super Bowls. There's just a sense this team can never do it. That said, though, they looked so bad against the Texans that if they don't come out and look good, it's just going to feel again like Josh and his little friends.
If they lose, it actually, not to take it back to the Maple Leafs, because the Bills are a higher end version of what the Maple Leafs are. But if they lose, and it's like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, we don't have nearly enough talent around our star player. And listen, Thursday night, weird things happen. The Texans are a really good team defensively. They're one of the best defenses in the NFL. But if Buffalo loses to Pittsburgh, that's kind of a, there's a bunch of paper lions out there, and I think the Steelers are one of them. Yeah, it's going to be full-blown panic because also it's head-to-head. In terms of like who gets into the playoffs, whoever wins this game, they have an advantage if they both end with the same record.
I'm going to watch the Jags and the Titans this weekend. Just as a hate watch.
Because you hate your, ooh, that says you have so, if you watch, anyone who watches Jacksonville and Tennessee has so low self-esteem or they're a horrible gambler. It's one or the other.
Would you watch Jags and Titans or a bunch of The Office reruns?
Oh, The Office. It's not even close.
Yeah,
One
well,
brings me joy. The other doesn't. I don't care if I know the ep I'm like, oh, this is one where Jim and Pam get together. I'll take that over Cam Ward and Trevor Lawrence.
We don't have a ton of time. We'll try to get to the Jays and the Raptors, but if you had to pick just which one do you want to start with?
Let's do the Raptors. Listen, Dylan Cease, it's great. That's going to be there. What Brandon, my favorite thing about the Raptors, Scotty Barnes is taking like 1.5 fewer field goal attempts per game, and he's perfectly happy with it because he knows Brandon Ingram is the best offensive player they've had since Kawhi Leonard. What Brandon Ingram does, it just unlocks everything else around them. Scotty went to the free throw line 14 times against the Pacers. I love watching this Raptors team.
They're so fun to watch, and I feel like I owe Scottie and the team an apology. I absolutely do. Mostly because I kept expecting Scottie to evolve into something that he's not, that somehow he would become a dominant offensive player, and that if he didn't, then the team would always suffer because of it. But the truth is, he's just become the most Scottie, and his ability to spread his talent across several categories has totally transformed this team. And what he really needed, it feels like he's complementary to Brandon Ingram, but the truth is, it's the other way around. It's like he's turned Brandon Ingram into a soccer striker. You just be there, and when I get you the ball, you put it in.
Yeah,
Scottie is the midfielder.
it takes the burden away where it's like, Scotty, for the Raptors to win, you got to take 22 to 24 shots. You got to score around 25 points, or we're not going to win. That burden is gone. Now it's like, hey, Scotty, on some nights you'll be the leading scorer. Some nights you'll be the fourth leading scorer, but you're always going to be one of our top guys in assists and rebounds. Defense is incredible. It's the best version of Scotty Barnes is one where he doesn't feel he needs to be the number one guy on offense because that's not who he is, but he can still get you 20.
He is excellent in all phases of the game and dominant in none of them.
Yes.
But his ceiling is so high because he's just like that student that never gets 100 on a test, but they get A's every time they go out. He might be elite defensively. I still feel like
Yes,
he
he
has
is.
none.
He's elite defensively. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like, and I feel like he could probably get even better. What's interesting about Brandon Ingram to me is how. Well, one, he fits the team perfectly. But two, how we all said this is a shit deal without having seen him play.
Ah.
Particularly the league just said it's an overpay based on what he had been with the worst organization in the association.
I'm going to be fair and balanced.
Okay.
I thought Brandon Carlo, I thought that was a great deal by the Maple Leafs. I looked dumb. I loved the Brandon Ingram deal. The moment they did it, I know it's a bit of an overpay, but I'm like, this guy's been an all-star, stuck on the Pelicans, and he can do something that no one else on the Raptors could do. You know, just hit that mid-range shot consistently in the fourth quarter. We saw it against the Pacers. We saw it against Charlotte. Like we, and so I thought it was a great deal, the Brandon Ingram one. I loved it from day one.
In a way, this year has been a real victory lap for Masai Ujiri, who was roundly criticized for how he transferred the team from the winning chapter and the championship. Then there was a kind of couple years where they took a kick at the can and it just didn't happen. And then it felt like the hinterland, like this team's going to be lost for 20 years because they did not do a good job of the assets and getting new stuff for them, particularly Siakam and Ananobi. Those deals felt like we should have gotten more. This was circulating on Instagram and I wrote it down. So Siakam and Ananobi now have turned into Brandon Ingram, Immanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, Jacoby Walter, Uchai Agbaji, Jamal Shedd, Jonathan Mobo, and a 2026 second rounder. That's
Pretty good.
pretty good. Is it brilliant? No, it's not like there's anything in there where you go, we fleeced them, but they're 14-5 right now. He brought in Darko as the coach for a year or two. It was like, I don't really get this guy. And last year they were trying to lose. So
Gentleman tank.
the gentleman's tank. But with Darko as coach, and those are your assets moving forward, and a team that plays and. Masai talked much as much when the Raptors were bad about how he hated the brand of basketball they were playing. He did something that's incredibly hard to do in professional sports. He changed the culture on the fly. It's one thing to change the roster, but he brought in and has materialized over the last 2 or 3 years a team that is fun, energetic, beautiful to watch play. They share the ball, and anybody in the league could look at that and say, if I want to play a great brand of basketball and be treated like a king, I can go to Toronto.
Absolutely.
On the fly.
On the fly. Yeah. And now Masai's not here.
Fucking Rogers chased Masai out of town because they thought this guy is too big an ego and he makes too much money. Well, you know what? Don't be the next Jerry Jones, Ed Rogers. Don't be the one who's like, oh, you know, I know enough about this and I've won enough that I'll just make the shot. Like, because if you fuck this team over that Masai built, you better be right about Bobby Webster and you better be right moving forward because Masai right now, I'm not going to say genius, but boy, he looks like he's been vindicated.
100%. Absolutely. I'm watching the clock here, Bob. We got
Okay, let me
6
throw you a
minutes.
quick question. Take Scott, take the front liners out of it. Who are you loving on the wraps the most these days?
Jamal Shedd.
Yeah, he's some.
Well, Jamal Shedd, I'm doing the. Oh, is that the next Fred VanVleet? And that's wrong of me. That's bad. I'm
No,
jumping
do
ahead,
it.
but.
Do it. He's like Steady Freddy was not the same personality as Shed because Shed is like upbeat. You see things on Instagram of him getting Jacoby Walter to sing the anthem. Like he just looks like good times, Jamal Shed does. Statistically, though, the Mamushka, he's bringing so much heat off the bench. God, that second unit looks so good, and he's really the catalyst.
He is. My only problem with him is I need 6 more months before I'll be able to say his last name correctly instead of just the cowardly way out by just saying Mamu, which you hear on the broadcast
Looks
a
like
lot.
Wemby. Like, even though Wembanyama isn't that hard to say and you get used to it over time, everybody just calls him Wemby because they also had that fear. Like, I call this guy the Mamushka. Oh, Matt, before we go, can I throw out one thing? The only thing I haven't liked about the Raptors this season? Matt Devlin has got to stop trying to make the notorious BI3 happen.
You're right. It's true. At the same time, Bob, we started this podcast with you in pajamas with hearts on it. So who are any of us to judge? Bob, put some pants on.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.